dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A woman who has fought valiantly in that war in a couple of different capacities, first as a political prisoner in communist China, and subsequently as the chief of the China branch of the Voice of America, is our first guest. Her name is Sasha Gong. She, among other things, ran for the Virginia House of Delegates once upon a time. She's Harvard-trained, a PhD, and author of Born American, A Chinese Woman's Dream of Liberty. She's a good friend, also a member, founding member, in fact, of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. Always welcome here. Sasha, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, I'm calling in part because one of the things that happened to you has now happened to two of your former colleagues at the Voice of America. This seems to be something of a purge that has been slowly rolling out at the hands of Amanda Bennett, who heads up the Voice of America. Tell us a little bit about what's going on and why these two colleagues of yours, Fred Wang and Robert Lee, have been terminated just recently.
Yeah, well, they were accused of involving an interview 2 years ago. I conducted that live interview. In the middle of the interview, the Chinese government ordered Voice of America and Voice of America CAFE to cut it short. The interview was the target of the interview was a Chinese billionaire and also a whistleblower who told so many stories and details of corruption in China. So everybody after that, New York Times and Wall Street Journal, and everybody interviewed him. And there are all sort of, details emerge. For example, the Chinese government recruited a bunch of American businessmen, big businessmen like Steve Wang in the Republican Party to try to deport this guy. And the Chinese minister-level officials, two of them, came to the U.S. illegally trying to get him back and arrest his family and all that. So we know at least the Chinese would do that to you unless you really have some true information. But the interesting part here is originally the VOA tried to file five of my colleagues, and three of them, including me, were in the interview. Two of them had nothing to do with the interview. One is technical support, Robert Lee. He was simply being there in Washington. The other one was the executive producer, Bao Shen, of the show. And both of them had nothing to do with the interview. The only reason why they fired Robert Lee was that, well, when some manager, not his boss, came to say, you have to unplug, just pull it. And he said, well, I don't know. I got a different order. Why don't you give me a written order so I have, I can show people? And he got fired.
Yeah. So, Sasha Gong, what's the backstory here is in your time at the Voice of America, running the China Bureau, you had some other experiences, as I understand it, that gave rise to concern about the mission of VOA being improperly performed, shall we say, namely to share the truth with the audience in China. And what, in your experience, was going on, not only in this case, where clearly there was interference with a broadcast of a dissident, shall we say, but more generally, what kind of content was being supplied and what did you try to do about it?
Well, the way is the Voice of America was supposed to be the voice of American people. When you have a voice of American people, you have a voice of freedom, of democracy, right? No, they want to do the CNN model, which is I give you 50%, I give the other 50%. So in that way, when you think of it, people who criticize China, especially the Chinese, they are facing enormous pressure from the Chinese government. Many of them could not speak at all. But people who are pro-Chinese government, well, they can speak and they got a lot of benefit from the Chinese, and the Chinese government sent them out to speak. So eventually that ridiculous principle becomes, well, like the pro-Chinese, pro-government people speak whatever they speak, and the anti-Chinese government people have to be more careful, and they can't get the best people to talk about it. Moreover, in America's side, if you look just yesterday, for example, they're talking about U.S.-China trade war. They extensively covered a session in New York held by the U.S., by the U.S.-China some institute, and everybody on the stage, the big names, well, pro-China against America. They said, well, China, the trade war, America, it's a loss for America.
Yeah, so this is being broadcast by the Voice of America rather than the actual, you know, sort of policy direction of the United States government. And Sacha Gong, I guess the thing that's so worrying about this is not just that you were fired for, you know, trying to make sure that the people of China were exposed to the truth from the United States perspective, that your colleagues have now been cashiered, but that this is only part of a much larger effort that the Chinese are making through outlets like, oh, the Washington Post, for example, to propagandize in our own country. Tell us a little bit about that quickly.
Exactly. Washington Post led the way, and the China Daily, which is the official mouthpiece, now buying advertisements masquerading as news everywhere in many newspapers. President Trump once spotted that in Iowa. So think of it. China is now trying so hard to put their voice in our so-called mainstream media, especially the recent effort is in the Midwest to talk to the farmers. Tell the farmers you have to challenge Trump. Otherwise, you know, China will not buy your soybeans.
This is clearly part and parcel of a larger effort by the communist Chinese to wage information warfare against us. And the thing that's just extraordinary is that this woman, Amanda Bennett, whose husband happens to be Donald Graham, the former publisher of the Washington Post, is up to her eyeballs, as best I can tell, in trying to sort of facilitate that, or at least facilitate the effort to suppress information flowing into China that would be comparable to or aligned with our own government's policy.
Yeah, that's very understandable. If you look at her husband first, her husband started the cooperation in Washington Post with China, and then after he sold Washington Post, his main business is in so-called education, and not the normal education, but education to help students go out of their country to study abroad.
Sacha Gong, we have to leave it at that. We're going to talk a bit more about this with Bill Gertz. Sacha, come back to us again soon, if you will, and have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom. With Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
It's time for our tour inside the ring, a guided tour by the man who writes a prize-winning column of that name, Bill Gertz, one of our regulars here, I'm very proud to say, at Secure Freedom Radio. He is a senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon and a columnist at the Washington Times. Indeed, that is the venue for his Inside the Ring column. Bill is also the author of 7 best-selling books, the most recent of which is iWar, War and Peace in the Information Age. Bill, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
Well, I want to talk to you about your recent visit to South Korea in the company of my friend and colleague, Fred Flights. We talked about it with him a little bit a while ago. But before we do that, I did want to just pick up on the story that you wrote at the Washington Free Beacon about the issues that we were discussing a moment ago with Sasha Gong, namely some extraordinary things that are going on at the Voice of America, and specifically with respect to, it seems, a lot of punch-pulling, shall we say, with respect to the Chinese, and some people have lost their jobs as a result. Give us your take on what's going on.
Well, I don't think it would be an overstatement to say that it's a scandal at the Voice of America in particular, and U.S. broadcasting in general. The story is that in an interview back in April 2017, five journalists were put on leave for interviewing Guo Wengui, who is a dissident Chinese billionaire. And they canceled the what was to be a three-hour interview with the dissident in midstream. And as a result of that, these firings took place, first of Sasha Gong, and then now to Fred Wong and Robert Lee, who have been terminated basically for doing their jobs. And so it's surprising that there hasn't been, first of all, reform. I think one of the important pieces in my Free Beacon piece today was a quote from Secretary of State Pompeo, who said, was asked about this last month in a hearing before the Appropriations Committee on the State Department, that he said the VOA had become politicized and that he was very concerned about it. Well, my question is, why haven't they done anything? The director of VOA is Amanda Bennett. She's a former Wall Street Journal reporter, but significantly, her husband is Donald Graham, the former Post publisher who runs an educational testing service that is, and then is highly reliant on China for its business.
Increasingly so, as she pointed out, Bill, because they're taking large paid inserts that seem to the untutored eye to be just another news story, but are basically just Chinese communist propaganda. This is really worrying, and I think getting things sorted at VOA is really an important part of the effort that we're about at the Committee on the Present Danger of China to get us on a proper footing, a war footing, I think, in the face of the war footing China's on and what it's been doing in the way of unrestricted warfare against us for quite some time, as you know better than most. Hey, speaking of China and this war footing, one of the things that I know you had a chance to examine closely while you were in South Korea, Bill, was what the North Korean regime of Kim Jong-un is doing with respect to the threat it poses, not just to the South Koreans and to our installations like Camp Humphreys there, but also to us here at home, with, it appears, considerable help from both the Chinese and the Russians. Tell us what you found.
Yeah, 2 points on that. One is, first, we were able to visit Camp Humphreys, which is a new, brand new military base built at a cost of $11 billion, about 22 miles south of the capital. I was able to get some pics of their Patriot missile batteries, which shows that even though they moved the facility south of Seoul, they're still within missile range from North Korea, which has 70% of its missile and artillery forces within range of Seoul, the capital of South Korea. So that's the first issue. It hasn't really solved that problem. I think the big issue with Camp Humphreys was if there had to be an evacuation, the military would be stuck in the middle of this massive big capital there. As for some of the briefings we had with some of the officials in South Korea, we were able to visit a number of agencies and departments. The interesting thing was we were told about how the Russians and the Chinese are supporting the North Korean missile program and the nuclear program. Significantly, the Russians provided a number of rocket engines about 5 or 6 years ago, and that transfer of strategic technology gave what were described as a significant leap by the North Koreans in being able to develop what was essentially a Scud missile force into an advanced long-range strike capability capable of ranging the United States, a significant military transfer. For the Chinese, it was the transfer of transporter erector launcher bases. These were done covertly by the Chinese, who claimed that it was a commercial transfer for lumber haulers the next thing you know, we now have two North Korean ICBMs, that is long-range intercontinental range missiles, built on Chinese truck chassis now that are transporter, erector, launchers.
Mm. And am I right, Bill, that those vehicles are used by the Chinese as missile transporter, erector, launchers? They're not used by them for hauling lumber around.
No, it's very interesting. You know, any kind of a crane that you see on the highway here, this is what basically have been converted into missile launchers. And again, it's not that hard to do. You basically have to have a strong capability to lift a heavy missile off of its truck bed. But I can't think of a more militarily significant proliferation than giving a rogue state like North Korea the ability to strike the United States. Yet the U.S. has not directly sanctioned the company that was involved. What they have done is they sanctioned that company for sales to Iran and then said, oh, by the way, they transferred TELs, transporter erector launchers, to North Korea. So I think there really needs to be a greater focus on going after the Chinese for these proliferation activities, as well as the Russians.
Amen. And the reason that this mobile missile capability is so worrying is, of course, that makes the launch points of the missiles difficult to detect and counter. And as a result, it considerably enhances the offensive potential of, well, hostile states like North Korea. So, Bill, when you look at this, it's coming against the backdrop most recently of the launch by the North Koreans of what are called projectiles. I'm not quite sure what a projectile is in this setting, but doesn't that really come down to missiles? And what do we know about the missiles that the South Korean folks are clearly now in the range of, that the North Koreans are testing, despite some promises that have been made to President Trump to sort of stop doing this sort of thing?
Well, first point is, yeah, the idea of projectiles is ridiculous. This is an effort by diplomats to try to play down the fact that these were short-range missiles. Second, they were very significant developments in that the short-range missiles looked remarkably similar to the new Iskander Russian short-range nuclear-capable missile, and as well as having some new capabilities that the North Koreans did not have before. That's what we were able to learn during this visit to South Korea recently. So this, again, was a significant step forward. Clearly, Kim Jong-un is ratcheting up the pressure on the United States, which has given North Korea until the end of this month or the end of this year to really come to the table and sincerely negotiate its nuclear reductions.
Yeah. Bill, I'd like to put this into context, if you could. You keep your eye on the big picture better than just about anybody. What is China doing at the moment in the broader Western Pacific that we should be concerned about? We're going to talk in a little bit with J. Christian Adams about some of their seeming political warfare. But in terms of military activities and our own efforts to sort of respond to them.
Well, the big flashpoint right now is the South China Sea. I don't think that there is a precedent in history for a nation trying to take over an entire large-scale open ocean body of water like the Chinese are trying to do in the South China Sea. It's been a stealth creeping takeover. It began under the Obama administration, which looked the other way because it was because of its appeasement policies towards China. But we saw them first rebuild islands to the tune of 3,200 acres, and then we saw them militarize these islands. Now, as of April of last year, they've deployed advanced surface-to-air missiles as well as advanced anti-ship missiles. This poses a threat. The U.S., to counter that threat, has been conducting fairly aggressive freedom of navigation operations, that is sending warships within 12 nautical miles of these disputed islands. But you have to wonder, they came very close to a shootout last September when the USS Decatur was almost rammed by a Chinese missile destroyer. So the Chinese are clearly ready to ratchet it up. And during that event, it was clear to U.S. intelligence that the Chinese ship was ready to ram the Decatur because it had placed fenders over the side of the ship, which was clear indication they were ready for any kind of encounter. And then shortly after that, John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, made a very blunt warning to the Chinese, saying that our naval personnel have all the authorities they need to protect themselves from those kinds of incidents.
Yeah, important warning, but also an ominous portent, I'm afraid, of things to come in that part of the world. We'll be on that closely, as will you. Bill Gertz, have a great Memorial Day weekend. Come back to us next week. And we'll talk next with Claudia Rosette about Huawei, North Korea, and more right after this.
More with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and it is a special pleasure, as well as high privilege, to say we're joined by one of the greatest investigative journalists of our time, a woman whose exploits run the gamut from Saddam Hussein's oil for food program to any number of other scandals at the United Nations, and great reporting coverage from places like Moscow during the dark days of the Cold War, and from China as well. She is, of course, the great Claudia Rosette these days. You can find her column at PJ Media. She is also a periodic and very valued guest on this program. We're always delighted to have her back. Welcome, Claudia. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here.
So you've just written a piece at PJ about Huawei, this company we've been focusing on increasingly because of its role, among other things, in the race for the fifth generation wireless, better known as 5G. You had some important insights into what this operation is about and the role that it's clearly playing as an arm of the Chinese Communist Party. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, this is a case that very clearly and with enormous stakes pits the virtues of free trade, which are many, many, against the problems that here you have China, which is not free at all and is increasingly predatory and ambitious, sort of the rising power of the 21st century in a very dark way. With using that system. And the problem is you end up with a conflict between free trade and security at the heart of it. And Frank, I was writing in part in response to an op-ed published by somebody whose love of free markets I greatly respect and admire. This was George Gilder writing in the Wall Street Journal a few days ago. And he argued that Huawei, China's enormous telecom equipment and services company, is an asset, not a threat, that we should embrace it. And again, with great respect for George Gilder's long advocacy of capitalism, which really needs defending these days, capitalism is important. Nonetheless, I am making the case that for Huawei, which is, like everything else in China, subordinated to the Chinese government, you know, whatever the interplay of reasons there, it's a strategic asset. It's not our asset. It's a strategic asset of the People's Republic of China. And as such, as a technology company, it is very dangerous to say, let's just go ahead and let them set up enormous infrastructure for us. Let's go ahead and just freely do business with them as if they were simply selling undershirts. And there could be no knock-on effects. And the basic argument there is the real problem is that China is not a free, not only not, it's a tyranny. It's not only not free. It also is increasingly dangerous. If you look at the open ambitions the debt trap financing along their Belt and Road, which is basically setting up potential military bases for them in the future, the enormous cyber warfare capability they're cultivating, the military bases they've been putting on top of the artificial islands they've been building in disputed or not, or sort of, or somebody else's waters in the South China Sea. There is a whole array of things where what is out there is a rising threat. And unfortunately, that creates a real conflict with simply saying, let's go ahead and have open free trade, which is such a pity.
We have a colleague features on this program each week his insights from the Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman, namely its host, Kevin Freeman, our senior fellow specializing in economic warfare. And he has a very apt and short way of describing this disconnect, Claudia. He says what we regard as a global marketplace, our enemies regard as a battle space. And Huawei is kind of a prime example of how they will use that weaponized capability to collect data and manipulate it and control things, including the Internet of Things, in ways that will be quite injurious, I think, to our economy, probably, certainly, but our national security as well. Interestingly enough, Claudia, as we're speaking, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Theresa May, has just announced that she's going to be resigning from office. She has many flaws, but I think one of the most serious mistakes she made in office was her decision to allow Huawei into the United Kingdom and the theory that they'd be able to control it. But I think many in her intelligence community have said that's not likely to happen. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's exactly the problem. It's one more reason why it's probably a high time and then some for Theresa May to retire. This was not a good idea. And part of what we're now seeing is the difficulty of unwinding these sort of these much entwined deals, arrangements, the trade that's been going on around the world, where, you know, it has produced many benefits. There's no question about that. And at the same time, it is increasingly dangerous. And one thing Theresa May should have taken into account, President Trump is now trying to take into account with the executive order he signed on May 15th, enabling a ban on foreign adversaries selling such technology to us, is to protect against the day when this really could be turned against us. You know, Frank, ultimately, what's sort of heaving into view out there is the vague outline of a context in which we may be heading for the next Pearl Harbor, except the thing about Pearl Harbor is you don't know till it hits you what it's going to look like. In the last century, people didn't think, oh, you know, Japan would never bomb Hawaii. Okay, Japan lost that war after years of horrendous conflict, ending with a nuclear bomb, too, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Finally, they surrendered, that ended. And Japan is now our democratic ally. We're in the new century. China, which was our ally in World War II, is now and suffered greatly under the Japanese, is now the rising tyranny in the East. And we don't know what a Pearl Harbor would look like, but there's a very good chance that it would involve cyber, this digital technology, exactly the kind, and that's where Huawei is a worry. That's where Theresa May should have stood back. That's where I think President Trump has now a very difficult job, because there are all sorts of, you know, economic forces are powerful, and there are all sorts of appealing things, all sorts of enticements to do a lot of business with Huawei, with China.
Very powerful. Yeah. And this has been going on for years, of course, Claudia. This isn't a new phenomenon. We've had the business community, financial sector leading the charge on accommodations to China that have translated into enabling much of the threat that we're facing from it at the moment, which brings me to sort of a related point, Claudia, if I can just broaden the lens a little bit. My recollection is that you were covering Tiananmen Square 30 years ago when the Chinese cracked down violently against demonstrators there. There is this advent now, it's in fact emerging in China, of a surveillance state that would make such a congregation of opponents of the regime unthinkable, impossible as a practical matter. It involves massive numbers of cameras that this company Hikvision has been putting into place across the country. It involves artificial intelligence and data mining and facial recognition and the like. But Claudia Rosette, what it really is translating into, is it not, is a capacity for totalitarian control of a population that we've never really experienced before, and it unfortunately is likely not to be confined just to China, is it?
That's true, and it's actually, Frank, it goes even beyond China because it's tempting for any government. But let me just say on China, I think what it does is it says if China is ever going to really change, it's probably going to have to come from within the government. And that's, you know, there you get, a huge problem of how does that come about when the incentives at this point are for this sort of continued predatory creep. Oh, you take all the dissatisfaction inside a country, because people actually like to be free in the main, and you channel it into antagonistic behavior abroad, thus greatly ramping up the chances that we end, that this leads to war. Frank, may I just say that with trade, I have never been against all trade with China. I think, for one thing, it would be impossible to stop it. You know, that again, we'd end up buying things that said made in Malaysia and they'd be from China. That's how that would work. But what I think has been America's great mistake over those 30 years since Tiananmen is that we did not draw clear lines that said to China, no. You may, when they began their first artificial island building venture in the South China Sea, we should have been willing to say, we'll use force to shut this down. You don't get to do this. And we didn't.
To the contrary, we turned a blind eye towards it, if not signaled our acquiescence to it.
Correct. So my suggestion would be what I think that trying to battle this all out sort of on the economic, in the economic arena, is in the end very blunt instruments. There are certain things that are vital, as we've just been talking about. You don't let China tech come in and set up your security critical infrastructure. But the other thing that needs doing is we must rebuild our Navy. We must be investing in a massive way in the military. Think Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. What we need here is significant deterrence such that China, in their calculus, finds it less interesting to prod and push and potentially get ready to really attack us.
Peace through strength. Yeah, this is a good thought for Memorial Day weekend. Claudia Rosette, thank you for joining us on It's Eve. I hope you have a splendid weekend. Next up, we'll speak with J. Christian Adams. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined, I'm very pleased to say, by J. Christian Adams. You frequently see him on Fox and in other outlets commenting on some of the most important issues of our time, notably drawing on his expertise as a former career lawyer in the Department of Justice, specifically in its voting rights section, which has equipped him to be a, well, duty expert on voting fraud and the kinds of machinations that have taken place on an ongoing basis, I might say, to steal elections. He is the author of a New York Times best-selling book, Injustice, Exposing the Racial Agenda of the Obama Justice Department. He is these days the president and founder of the Public Interest Legal Foundation and a columnist at PJ Media. Christian Adams, it's good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Hi, Frank.
I heard the other day that you were one of those who has been subjected to, well, what I think of as lawfare. You wrote about it in the New Criterion recently under the headline, The Denunciation Machine. As an object of a lot of denunciation, I have to say this caught my eye. Tell our audience about what you have personally been subjected to and why this is of such concern more generally.
Right. The left has triggered something involving defamation campaigns. In other words, they're suing conservatives for defamation whenever conservatives engage on public issues. For example, James O'Keefe just this week won a huge victory in federal court in Asheville, North Carolina, against some leftists who were suing him because he reported on Antifa. And some of the Antifa activists took him to federal court, and he won that case. Other conservatives have been sued. Conservative law firms have been sued for defamation after the North Carolina gubernatorial election, where they were attempting to challenge voter fraud. The Competitive Enterprise Institute is being sued for defamation because of their reporting on global warming. My organization is being sued for defamation because we reported factually that Virginia had canceled over 5,000 registrants as non-citizens, and many of whom voted. And so there is clearly a campaign going on to deplatform and denounce conservative organizations who are fighting the fight, all using the tools of defamation.
And the object clearly is silencing us, is it not? Its purpose is quite transparently to prevent, whether it's through court orders or through, you know, the preoccupation defending yourself or the costs, the onerous costs associated with doing such a defense, to prevent you from doing your job.
Right. And on the margins, it's designed to prevent conservatives from even entering the public space because it scare people off. But it does more than that, Frank. I mean, one of the things that's happened just in the last 2 weeks, just to give your listeners a sense of things, is they, through discovery, obtain lots of email traffic about how the movement operates, how about the pro-freedom, pro-liberty movement operates. And then they file pleadings in court that gratuitously attach all of these gems. So they then put them out there in the blogosphere for the left-wing media to compliantly write about what's in these emails between conservatives that have absolutely nothing to do with the case, of course. But it's designed to terrorize. It's designed to squelch speech and eliminate opposition.
And in your case, obviously, it's not doing that, but it is taking up your resources and your energy and time. Thank heavens James O'Keefe prevailed in his, but this is an onslaught that is underway and is coming to a theater near you, folks. This is not going to be confined to leaders in the public policy space like J. Christian Adams, I fear. Hey, speaking of the left and what it's up to, I wanted to talk with you about what's being done to the Attorney General of the United States, Bill Barr, by Democratic leftists in the House of Representatives specifically. Talk a little bit about this idea of holding him in contempt or even impeaching him, some have talked about, I guess as a sort of speed bump on the way to impeaching the President of the United States.
Well, obviously, this is all selective outrage because they had one of the most corrupt, duplicitous, dishonest attorneys general in the history of the United States for 8 years. And Gerald Nadler and his cohorts in Congress weren't the least bit concerned about what Eric Holder did. But now that William Barr is the attorney general, and he has indicated an interest in figuring out what sort of biases and crimes may have been committed in the targeting of a presidential campaign by the national security apparatus, he's become the target of Democrats who want to scare and intimidate him. Do I see a pattern here into enforcing federal law to figure out if the power of the federal government was abused to help a presidential campaign?
Yeah, the selective outrage is particularly evident, I have to say, Christian Adams, in a comment that was made by the House Intelligence Committee chairman in response to an order from the president to direct the intelligence community to cooperate with that investigation. The attorney general has said in train, he said Trump and Barr were plotting, quote, to weaponize law enforcement and classified information against their political enemies, unquote. As you say, this is the ultimate, you know, outrage, I would argue, because, of course, this is exactly what Democrats have been doing
That's what Bill Barr is trying to get to the bottom of right now. And Adam Schiff has been their handmaiden and helpmate and otherwise cheerleader.
Of course, everybody recognizes that as hypocrisy. But let me add a layer of dangerous to it, because when we reach a point in this country where one faction engages in certain behavior, which in this case was weaponized the national security apparatus to hurt the Trump campaign, and then accuses the other person, the other side, of doing that, we've reached a real disconnect from objective reality. And when you reach disconnects from objective reality, tumult and disorder tends to rush in. And I'm afraid this is more than just hypocrisy. I'm afraid this is a very dangerous mindset in Adam Schiff and the rest of his colleagues.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you more, Christian Adams, and I'm fearful that unless and until we hold people accountable for what they've done to engage in precisely this kind of weaponizing, we're going to see an awful lot more tumult at the very least. Let me ask you about one other thing. Christian, we've talked about this over the years. You have been personally involved in trying to help in a voting rights matter in Guam. It has been resolved at the district court level satisfactorily, supporting your client. I'd like you to talk a little bit about that, but also whether this is a phenomenon that is manifesting itself elsewhere, particularly in the Pacific area, and what it might mean for the sovereignty and, well, national security, for that matter, of the United States.
Guam is, I think you may agree, is one of the most, if not the most important strategic location in the Pacific for the United States. It's got Anderson, which is where all the bombers are based in times of need. It's got the only deep water port between Manila and Pearl, and it's a U.S. territory. And activists on Guam want to agitate separation from the United States, and they cooked up this election where only certain racial groups were allowed to vote. And my client was a retired Air Force major who said, hey, I want to vote too. And they said no. So we sued them. We won. It's now before the Ninth Circuit. But what you're seeing, Frank, across the Pacific is similar racial agitation efforts to undermine U.S. sovereignty in places. And it's also happening in Hawaii, where similar racial activists are trying to set up their own little nation inside Hawaii to have a measure of tribal control, if you will, over large resources and parts of the island. And it's largely because America is bad. It's, you know, they're the occupying force, and it's a phenomenon you're seeing across the Pacific.
And these are brought to us by leftists and others who are tied, it seems, to sort of communists in other parts of the world, notably Latin America, Venezuela included. But they also seem, or it would certainly seem to be the case, that they would have a common bond with communist China, which would like nothing more than to screw up America's strategic position in the Pacific and Guam and Hawaii and elsewhere. No?
Well, particularly Guam, because Guam is really, as I said, the tip of the spear as far as naval power, air power. It's the last sovereign outpost where the U.S. flag flies, where bombers and destroyers and submarines. And so China, of course, would be insane not to be concerned about Guam.
Yeah. J. Christian Adams, thank you for the superb work that you do at the Public Interest Legal Foundation. Come back to us again soon.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.